Hello, welcome to the ZX Spectrum. My name's Lizzie Hodgson.
And my name's Branna Ralph.
And the ZX Spectrum, we kind of like take an intergenerational look at all things digital and media and technological. And last week we had a great guest. We had Mark Ash, who's CEO of Pure 360, which is a kind of like a marketing, online marketing company.
Yeah, specialising around email marketing.
And what was your favourite bit about that chat?
I loved some of the views that he had about sort of the future, and I'm very hopeful that they're going to be doing lots at Pure 360 around building out their sort of future plan. And it really excited me about sort of the future of email marketing, because I do still love it.
Yeah, I also liked is the culture they're trying to build there. So have a listen to all of our previous episodes as well. And this week we've got a guest in. We've got Samantha Oakley from So Law. Samantha is an IP lawyer. And we're going to talk about EU Directive Article 13. It sounds quite a complex area, but we're hoping that Samantha is going to help us kind of understand it a little bit more. Samantha, do you want to introduce yourself and tell people what you do?
Yes, so I'm Samantha. I set up my own consultancy company a while ago, specialising in advising small companies on IP. I actually have a background in working for technology companies, telecoms companies, and media and broadcast companies. So I've kind of seen the whole spectrum. Been doing it for a long time, so kind of seen all these arguments come backwards and forwards several times. And it's interesting how we've got to where we are now. Arguably, there's nothing new. This has all been going around for quite a while, but it's interesting now that it's finally actually coming into a more formal law and process.
So do you want to explain a little bit what Article 13 is and why should we be? I mean, it's a directive. What does that mean?
It's called the Copyright Directive. Mm-hmm. It's an EU law. So just to make the distinction, there under EU law, there are regulations and there are directives. Mm-hmm. Regulations have direct application. So I think we're all very familiar with GDPR, the R in that being regulation, mm-hmm. And that being a law that had to apply to the UK. And at that time, we very much were and are part of the EU. So essentially, we had no choice. We had to adopt the measures. And the other thing about it being a regulation is you have to adopt them wholesale. A directive is slightly different. A directive is a law, but it basically means that every member state in the EU can interpret those laws and incorporate them in their own way. Mm-hmm. So you would end up, so this is called the EU Copyright Directive. We could, for example, have the Copyright Act 2019. We'd have to take all the principles on board, but the way it's done, we could actually implement ourselves in different ways.
So we could have different legal text around how they did it, as long as it followed the same principles for what it was.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what is Article 13?
So Article 13...
It's not even Article 13 anymore, is it? Because they finally published the law, it moved to like a different article. I think it's 16 now, isn't it?
It might do. So it's Article 13 of the Copyright Directive. Like mm-hmm. you say, if, as and when we implement it, putting Brexit to one side for a moment, if, as and when we implement it mm-hmm. into the UK... it, like you say, we would then be rewriting it. It could be section number, article number, you know, whatever it ends up being. But going back to saying that there's kind of nothing new in this, what Article 13 is attempting to do is plug the gap in a lot of copyright content and a lot of content that has IP rights attached to it being widely distributed throughout the internet without the right kind of permissions put in place, basically. Mm-hmm. So commonly at the moment, you have like a takedown process, for example. Mm-hmm. You might be able to send a cease and desist letter, but it's notoriously tricky. It's difficult. You know, good luck if you can find somebody or somewhere to contact in the first place. If you do, they're not overly incentivized to do much about mm-hmm. it. They might at best pass on your comments. Good luck trying to find the person who actually is distributing the content, etc., etc. So I suppose that's the problem. I suppose in some ways it's worth understanding mm-hmm. the problem before we now understand what Article 13 is doing. So what Article 13 now is trying to do is say, okay, this thing has kind of got out of control. So the internet service providers, and I think they're calling them the information society service providers. I think that's the terminology they're using. But we would commonly recognise it as being Google, Facebook, YouTube, also arguably Instagram, you know, you name it. So basically social media and the big platforms we all know very well. So what it's starting to do now is impose an obligation on them to control this content. There has been arguments about whether or not this does or doesn't have to be done by putting automated processes in place. So YouTube and the other big ones we've named do have certain online controls in place already.
Yeah. I mean, for like example, with like YouTube, they have the content ID system, which is somebody who works regularly with creators and influencers and things like that. At the moment, it's kind of very, very strict and lots of videos will get hit. I remember recently reading that there was a YouTuber called Mr. Beast. He's quite a large YouTuber now, and he sung the lyrics, like a single lyric from the song, in like not even in like with backing tunes or anything. He just sort of said the words and sung it in like some form of tune. It wasn't even that good of a tune, and the system picked that up and automatically hit his video. So it's a very automated system. And I think on YouTube as well, and I don't know if this is the same for the other platforms, they have like two systems. So YouTube have their content ID system, which is their system that tracks and looks at it themselves. And then companies themselves can also have their own systems which kind of look at YouTube as well, and can it would be considered sort of a manual claim if that system was to claim it because it's outside of YouTube. And I think YouTube's trying to improve and push to people using Content ID more, but there is, I think the problem at the moment in the copyright sense on YouTube with lots of people we have is people misusing the copyright system. As probably most of our listeners know, there's this thing called fair use, which means that you can use content in a fair use case, and the line between that is difficult.
Why are you smiling?
I'm smiling because fair use has a legal meaning, and I'm smiling at the fact that you think, oh, it's fair for me to use it. I've determined it's fair, it's okay, which is a common misconception about fair dealing, as I would refer to it. So there are actually certain things that are deemed a legal defence under like fair dealing. Mm-hmm. So it is criticism, review, critique, parody, pastiche, etc. So I think that's the step a lot of people miss. A lot of people think, well, I've determined what I'm doing is fair, so it's okay.
No, I completely get what you mean in that way, but in the system at the moment, the Content ID system is blind to that. They just see it as that piece of content being within the content itself, and they don't look at whether it's being critiqued, whether it's being that. And the thing about YouTube is, I'm going to explain for people that don't know, the way the system works is that somebody can hit you with a claim, and then they'll automatically sort of like, they can claim the revenue on your video automatically, and then you have a chance to dispute that claim, so you can go back and say that's that. But then if they decide to take the claim further and they win the claim, then you'll get a strike on your channel for that, and three strikes and your channel is deleted. I think your first strike you used your live streaming privileges, and the second strike I don't think you can upload for a certain period of days. And if you then go and try and counter it, the system at the moment goes and turns around and goes, you know, if they come back. But then if they come back on you, then I think they have to take a legal action. In essence, that's them legally then stating that they sort of officially, I guess, claiming that that's their content. And there's lots of sort of controversy around the system at the moment, because in essence, creators can be sometimes penalised if they go and claim a video there, and then they go, oh, it's not actually, it shouldn't have been claimed, but then they have no way of, you know, like small creators don't have large amount of resources that large companies will have, and ways to sort of get themselves out of that.
I think what it is to me is the algorithms don't understand nuances, and the nuances are actually what often are the differentiators for how people are going to use this stuff. So we, you know, for Think Nation, we use music, but we always get the rights from the, you know, the originator, mm-hmm. things like that. And it's very, very quick. As soon as you upload a video and there's a piece of music, they recognise it and they say, we think this is a potential copyright breach, things like that. That's fine. But what happens when it is like brand new, kind of like saying the nuances around like humming a tune or saying something or singing or using lyrics within that piece of content that actually gives value to that content, gives value to the originator of that piece of music. Where does that line get drawn?
Because I'm curious in the sense of, like, if you were in that example to say sort of a single lyric or hum a tune, would that be considered fair use, or would that be considered unfair use and use of their IP?
I think you've got the law and you've got how the internet service providers are choosing to implement their responsibilities of how to do it. So I think sticking first of all with kind of Article 13, recognising that it's very difficult to police this thing. You know, this has been going on for years and they've recognised it's very difficult to find the originator of content and, you know, like I was saying earlier, you know, who to even send takedown notices to, etc., etc. So they were pushing back on having regulation for a long time. So they were basically saying, well, let us try and police ourselves and we'll put these systems and processes in place and we'll put these, you know, automatic ID generators in place and we'll see how it goes. I think, like you say, it's not a foolproof system. Mm-hmm. I think it helped a lot, but it's not foolproof.
Mm-hmm. Also, when it's self-regulated, it doesn't. Self-regulation is a lovely, lovely idea, but time and time again, we can see it is abused and it is stretched. Again, within what I'm saying, there's a fine line. You don't want to come down with, you know, a big kind of like, you know, a baseball bat and say everyone's got to behave like this. But at the same time, companies and people will abuse these systems.
But I think when we talk about the big players, and there was a huge pushback from this directive from them, was the idea that at the moment they know the systems aren't perfect, and I think they appreciate that. I would say at the moment the systems, at least on YouTube, and I can't really speak for the other ones, they benefit the copyright claimants over the creators themselves, which I think is then taking a hard, hard line on it and trying to find that balance. But I think, interestingly, sort of Article 13 starts to impose almost legal responsibility on YouTube, for example, to act on that. As you mentioned, that it's a directive and not a straight law, and I would say that kind of makes it even maybe more worrying than less worrying, because we don't know how each individual country is going to implement it, and rather they might implement it in a different way to, you know, the next door neighbour, things like that. Like, I know, for example, Germany at the moment have very strict laws on, like, music and things like that. When I used to go to Germany, I couldn't access lots of videos on YouTube, for example, because the German laws had restrictions on that. And so I can imagine Germany will be a country that will find their way around in doing it. And I worry about the inconsistency. Obviously, it's not like the entire planet that's going to be affected, but I think now more than ever, laws that maybe go ahead in, say, the US or that go ahead in the EU affect everybody around the world, no matter where you are. You know, if you're in the US, it's still going to have an effect, because creators and consumers as well are in all countries and they watch people across borders. And my worry and concern comes from that.
So basically, the copyright directive is the framework. So yes, each individual member state can implement it in their own way, but they can't go totally off-piste.
Yeah.
You know, so going back to Article 13 and back to the discussion we're having a minute ago about using electronic means and methods to implement it, that is not dictated. So you may have some member states that will say you'll have to use it. You might have some who are perhaps more aware of the issues of the fact that electronic implement and automatic implementation is not a perfect system, so they might not mandate that. I think what will happen is these big players will just have to become a bit more innovative about how they do this from now on, because they've now got an actual legal responsibility. I think education actually is at the heart of a lot of this. So the second thing I would say, picking up on your point about different countries implementing it within the EU, as you quite rightly picked up, the US itself has different intellectual property laws, as does Australia, as does Japan, as does, you know, name another country. Again, nothing new. We've been dealing with it for years. You know, there are actually a lot of synergies around the world about protecting your content, because ultimately that's what it relates to. So I don't think actually it being a directive and it being implemented in slightly different ways throughout Europe will hopefully cause as many issues as you're anticipating. And like you say, ultimately we're all on one platform, or, you know, one of these big platforms, and they will just have universal implementations and ways of dealing with this. So hopefully it shouldn't actually matter where your content, whether you are a rights holder in America, Australia, UK, Estonia, you know, wherever.
The concern that I have is I think that the way that the law almost forces the large companies to go about doing it, would almost penalise and limit, you know, people's ability to express themselves and do stuff online. Because I think from what I've understood and from what I've read, the only way that they would be able to implement this is by, you know, having tougher checks, because they have to do that. And, you know, YouTube, for example, for one of their suggestions might mean that they have to start geo-blocking and sort of censoring content around things. And I worry that as somebody that likes to express views and express stuff online, it will start to lead to people not being able to express themselves.
The challenge you've got also is that you've got an entire generation of people who only know how to do this through these things. And it's a bit like they've had all of these years of doing, expressing themselves, being creative, creating stuff online, millions of younger people in particular. It's like their way of life is going to change for them.
And I worry it slows the process of being able to do that, because it's not necessarily that those people are, you know, misusing IP, but then the big players then have to make sure that they're not misusing IP. And that process, I think, when it then becomes their responsibility, will mean that they'll have to take a completely different approach to it than they are at the moment. And I see that the approach that they're doing at the moment, definitely on YouTube, is doing big things. And I wonder if, you know, in my opinion, I think the spirit of Article 13 is a good idea, but I worry that the way that it forces Google and Facebook and companies like that potentially could take away from the resources and the time and the profits for, you know, innovating. It could, you know, lead to a demise in that area, or fundamentally just lead to them almost having a quote-unquote separate experience and a separate internet for people within the EU to people who are outside of it.
I would argue the complete opposite, actually. I would argue this will actually foster creativity, because I almost think it's too easy to just keep relying on using other people's content.
But there is an ecosystem within that. I'm not talking about, like, you know, taking copyrighted stuff or anything like that. We build and create on other people's creations and so forth and so forth. That is a good thing, I think.
Maybe I should just debunk a potential myth here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because from what I'm hearing with the whole building on things, you're saying you're taking inspiration from people and ideas. So there is no protection over inspiration and ideas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That is not a debate. You know, like you say, nothing is ever that new in the world. I think there's something like seven stories in the world or something
seven,
like that.
Yeah. We're just repeating ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. So that is totally understood and totally recognised. So like you say, there is a whole world of difference between taking inspiration from something or someone, and or using an idea. You know, we wouldn't have Saturday night television if they weren't all using exactly the same idea, essentially. But it's the expression of that idea. Mm-hmm. It's the taking somebody else's clip, somebody else's character, somebody else's song, you know, somebody else's poem.
But I think the difficulty is, in some ways, what we have in the law at the moment is a fair use way to do that. And I worry that the system will then take away the fair use case of being able to do that. So, for example, in using songs, there is a fair use case through parody and through other means of or critique of doing that, whereas I worry that if the large players then have to impose it on that, they're going to have to then somehow determine if that's fair use. And I worry with current technologies and the current way we do it is that there isn't a way, a feasible way to do that on a large scale, because YouTube gets like 400 hours of content a minute or something like that. It's ridiculous how much you get uploaded, and obviously lots of that never goes public to the site because it is, you know, copyrighted material, but lots of it does, you know, make it onto the site. And if there's blocks on that, I feel like when you're putting hard lines on it, that there won't be that case to allow for fair use, which is my worry and concern, because that's what I think you were more touching on the idea of expression, is being able to, you know, use that and express that. And if YouTube have to turn around and save their own backs to stop them getting, you know, potentially in trouble, they can't sit and watch every single video. I don't know if you're in agreement, that that's completely implausible, that we can't have a human being check every single video that uploads to YouTube.
You could, and that's the point.
No, but you literally couldn't, for the amount of stuff that's uploaded.
Yeah, I think there was a calculation that somewhere that that there you would need like a workforce that was the size of a country or something like that, like a large country.
So it would be totally unfeasible. So the only way forward is through using technology to do this, and algorithms, AI, all of those.
And they make steps to do that already, and the system is almost too good at it at the moment of removing that, and they're still trying to find the balance. My opinion on the matter with Article 13, if you upload content to YouTube, I am very much of the opinion that you are the person that's doing that action, not YouTube. YouTube shouldn't be held responsible for that. I should personally be held responsible for what I am doing.
I think that's exactly the point that we were making, is that I think what this will come back to is education. Mm-hmm. So I would say don't blame the law. I think intellectual property laws and copyright laws and fair dealing and Article 13 of this copyright directive are trying to do the right thing. What we're saying is that actually, for commercial reasons, these big internet service providers are actually using the bluntest of instruments and tools and the cheapest and most efficient way of doing it. And like you say, these are the consequences. So I don't think it's the law that's wrong. I think it's...
I disagree, because I think when you put a heavy hand on that, the problem with is that YouTube, Facebook, you know, Instagram, all those are big ways that are used for sort of freedom of expression and freedom of speech and being able to post sort of widely on there. Yes, there are rules to protect that in some ways, but I think when you start to put laws and stuff like that in place, the only people that I see that benefiting it on a larger scale is the large companies that own large amounts of IP rather than the small companies.
Why are you shaking your head?
Because I, for example, could write a song. You know, this has been, so do you remember Napster and Pirate
Yes.
Bay?
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember, yeah.
You know, happened. It's no different to that when, you know, basically they took huge swathes of music, put it online, everybody started distributing it. You know, then we got the advent of the, you know, the bedroom recording artist. Yeah. So again, I think we're coming back to, why do you need to use other people's intellectual property? There is nothing in this that stops you recording your own original content and distributing it far and wide. No. You know, so there's nothing wrong with that.
But it stops you from, in my opinion, it stops you from making a fair use argument on the content that you're using.
I don't think it stops the fair use argument. The fair use argument is always there. This is where the fair use argument comes up against the blunt tool and instruments that the big ISPs have decided to implement. So that's what I mean. I don't think the law's wrong. I think the implementation can perhaps and should be more adaptable. And like you say, there might be AI methods and other methods. Yeah. I think there should be more education. I think generally, maybe even at school level, primary education level, I think there should be that education. I think throughout the greater media world, we all absorb things nowadays. Like you say, we absorb it from TV, from radio, from online, from social media. We absorb information from lots of places. I actually think the internet service providers themselves have a good role in educating people. I think what will probably happen is we'll all be signing lots more acceptable use policies. It'll have lots of... things in there saying you shouldn't upload content unless you know you have. It's kind of there already, buried deep. It'll come front and
it'll
center.
Come up to the surface so that it's more explicit. So
yeah.
And then in time, because that'll become the norm,
yeah,
we will understand that that is just how it is.
Yeah.
So your behaviours change because you're forced to change them. And then in time, it'll just become a natural kind of right response.
I do, in the essence of the law, I do. I worry, though, that the law is here almost too early in the way that we need to tackle the problems. And I worry that the ISPs will have to go the other way because they don't have the technology and the ability to, you know, look through 400 hours of content a minute, when in essence they need to do it, like they have to do it the other way, where they have to start blocking out content and censoring content rather than, you know, finding ways around it. And the way that AI is built is AI is built by having as much information as possible and having as much data. And I worry that if they start like pulling all of this away, then it's going to start, you know, a snowball downwards rather than, you know, a snowball upwards.
But AI is also built on those biases that we already have.
So, unconscious
bias. You know, conscious, unconscious, and conscious bias. So AI is only going to be as good as the information that we put into it. which again, this kind of like, oh, AI is going to sort everything out. We've got to remember that the humans are the ones that are going to be programming the AI to learn. This is just sort of like sweeping, saying, well, AI will sort it out. That in itself is a worry to me, because who's going to be the ones that are going to say, defining the terms within which AI is going to learn and do this and find it?
My worry with the terms at the moment, with our current technical ability, is that those terms will have to be, as they kind of are on the content ID system at the moment, are, oh, we had a part of the song in it. We can't consider if this was fair use or whatever, so we're just having to, you know, get rid of the video.
That comes down to the nuances again. Yeah. And the nuances come through a far kind of like a far more, you know, you're talking almost like we're talking about AGI at that point, you know, artificial general intelligence. You're talking about kind of context and feelings and, you know, understanding arguments and things like that, which is AI is nowhere near that.
Yeah. And that's why I think the law is a bit too early in that way, in the fact that I don't think we have the plausible ability to implement the law in a way that doesn't lead to less censorship, in essence.
I think there's a lot of people that argue the law is far too late. So I think it's the difference between, as I say, the difference between the law and how the implementation of these electronic systems has been put in place. And you've got, you know, a very blunt instrument, and it's like everything's hitting this brick wall. I think what will also come about is, say, for example, you'll upload something, you'll tick a box to say, yes, it's my own content, or if it's got third-party content in it, I tick a box to say I'm using on the basis of parody, pastiche, you know, common critic review, pick your heading. I would say genuinely, if you're going to defend yourself, because again, this comes back to a genuine defence. You cannot just upload that. You cannot use third-party content just because you want to.
Yeah.
It genuinely has to be fair use. Yeah. It genuinely has to be comment, critique, review, pasty, you know, whatever heading. So that's the other bit where I think education needs to come in. I think it's all too easy for people to think they can use it.
I just worry about the fact that if you tick those boxes and you say you have that.
Well, what I was going to say is then I think what will happen is if you've pre-ticked those boxes, what you need is levels and layers of review. You will eventually hit a human. So basically, you know, you might hit the auto wall, the equivalent of the firewall, and it'll bounce something up. I think what maybe shouldn't happen is the automatic takedown. I get why they're doing it, because they're protecting their liability. But maybe what it needs is a faster, smarter system that basically hits the firewall, bounces back to you and says, I recognise that there's third-party content in here. You ticked a box to say, to say it's fair dealing on the basis of whatever. This is now being passed to, say, an adjudicator. At that point, again, we need to work out, you know, what percentage of things is happening. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's not my job to worry about that. Then you'd have an adjudicator who might review it. Or actually what would happen is that I think, going back to my original point of at the moment, it's very hard to find one, rights holders, and two, the person who's potentially unlawfully uploading third-party content. I think what the internet service providers need to be better at doing is maintaining those records, so that you get the automatic firewall bounce back. It then pings you over to the person at the rights holder company. They then ping something to you saying, what are you doing using my content? You ping something back saying, actually, I'm fair dealing it, you know. But it can happen. It sounds a long, complicated process. It can happen fairly quickly and fairly instantly.
But I think that the process that you described is quite long in the way, and I think that leads to YouTube and other services having to be overprotective and having to be over there, because it's their responsibility, in essence. And I still stand by the fact that if I was to upload something that breached copyright, like if I was to just go on there and upload a song, you know, that I, you know, recorded off of Spotify or whatever, then I should be the one responsible for that, not YouTube.
Now, that's because you're a very responsible citizen online. I'd say you're very much the exception that proves the rule. Yeah, if only the other billions of people who use it were equally as responsible as you.
But now you're saying billions of people, and can you imagine how long that process would take? You've just explained where it'll go back and forth and back and forth. I think in principle I can agree with it. I think that how it's going to be implemented is going to be tricky. And I also want to ask is, like, does it include things like, you know, if you're writing a blog and you're linking to other blogs and you're linking to other content, or you're linking to a BBC site, or and from your advertising that you're getting on your blog or whatever, you are then getting an income from it.
And I know it covered as well, from what I've read online, is the idea that you can take sort of snippets of news articles and things like that, and it started placing regulations around that.
So now we're talking about Article 11.
Mm-hmm.
So Article 11 is there because of the dying newspaper industry.
It's not dead quite yet. I mean, there are exceptions. The New York Times is bouncing back, and The Guardian has got a phenomenal approach to how it's doing it.
Well, I think there's a difference between the quality of journalism and the business model and it being able to survive, and that's the whole point. So this is the argument from the traditional newspapers, is that we invest in good quality journalism. Quite a lot of them will invest in good quality investigative journalism. You know, there's MP expenses, the Panama and Paradise
Papers.
Which is
what we need it's actually what you need in order for a robust democracy. You have to have those checks and balances. Just to quickly go on a bit of a tangent, local press has been undermined completely, and as a result, things like council meetings aren't being covered. So the democratic process, where you would usually have reporting of processes within councils, is being lost, and therefore people aren't understanding the decisions. This is why we do have to have a robust news establishment who can hold people in power to account. This has nothing to do with fake news. This is robust reporting. I'm interested to hear, like, how does that work in all this?
So this is the argument for Article 11. It's basically the traditional press, for want of a better word, are saying, nobody is going to the newsagent to buy my paper anymore. You know, especially since you're having to charge £2 a pop because you've got to pay for your good journalists and all the rest of the infrastructure, etc., etc. You know, and these stories don't happen overnight, like you say. So it costs money to produce good journalism. However, nobody is bothering to either go to the traditional news agents, and also the Times are the ones who did, the major ones who put their news content behind the paywall. Again, yep. Very few people now are actually bothering to pay to access news behind a paywall.
But surprisingly, quite a lot more than I think even the Times are expecting themselves.
I'm not saying nobody does it. I'm saying that the vast majority of people now have an expectation to be able to access news for free.
Yeah.
Now, there isn't the BBC comes into this as well, because it's a public-funded institution. Mm-hmm. You know, again, they're ones who try to do good quality news journalism. They're governed by Ofcom, so everything has to be very fair and balanced, etc., etc. But as a payoff for having publicly funded, they have to make their information and news available to all. That's the trade.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where the big arguments come in, because it's then so easy for anybody to just keep redistributing their news online. So therefore, why would you bother paying for news when you can get it for free? So this is the argument about Article 11. It's the, okay, similar to the traditional copyright argument of, are you using a substantive and or material part of that work? So this is where the argument is, well, as long as it's only a link maybe, or as long as it's only a small snippet, or, you know, something like that, then potentially that might be okay, because again, arguably you are not using a material substantial part of the copyright, and you are still then maybe signposting people back to the original place where the content is. So that is the argument for having Article 11. I'm sure there's an, as we've had arguments and counter arguments over Article 13, there are arguments and counter arguments around Article 11.
So, what I mean, obviously, we in the UK at the moment are in the never ending circle of hell that is known as Brexit.
For all sides of the political spectrum.
For every side of any kind of spectrum whatsoever. Assuming at some point hell does come to an end and we leave, like it or not, we are out of the EU. Therefore, we will not be under these kind of directives anymore. Do you think that the UK would actually do something similar or adopt something similar to this? Or could it go even more draconian? Could it become even more laissez-faire? What do you think could happen?
Personally, going back to the beginning of our conversation, you were saying the law's too early. I think there's an argument to say it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to that argument, let's say, for example, the law is too late and we do need something to help protect third-party content and rights holders. I know traditionally when we think about content, we tend to automatically think about the big players, but like you say, the vast majority of people with content on there at the moment are actually small individual people. And there's an interesting case at the moment around Instagram of all the big fashion houses, you know, the big high street stores going on Instagram and using people's designs from Instagram, and then suddenly they'll be in the high street stores with no accreditation. So don't always assume that the rights holder is a big corporation. It could equally be any one of the three of us.
But in the example you just gave, that would already be against the law prior to Article 13 and Article 11.
Well, everything's against the law. Everything's the copyright law.
But in the example you just gave around them going on Instagram and finding it, I don't know why that's Instagram's fault.
So taking the argument that actually the law is late to the party and we do need some kind of regulation to protect rights holders, be them big or small, on these platforms, then the argument is, if you were going to, why reinvent the wheel? If you're going to put laws and rules and regulations in place, you kind of might as well go with the framework of the Copyright Directive. However, there is a counter argument to that, to say that actually in the UK, we're traditionally quite anti-regulation. It's happened a lot in the banking industry. We've heard it a lot in the financial services, of we don't want tough regulation, come and do business in the UK. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not such a tough and not such a regulated country.
But the fallout of the lack of regulation created was party to the 2008 financial crash and the subprime mortgages, things like that. That's where, I mean, I know it's not quite the same, but this is where things can happen, and the repercussions are still being felt.
Yeah, but traditionally we've always been, and we still are, a light touch regulatory country. So the argument is, if you were saying, because so obviously at the moment,
which is why perhaps there is such a pushback against the EU.
Like you said, we have a whole new podcast on a lot of people's reasons for wanting to exit the EU. So for example, say at the moment, you know, Google are technically based in Ireland, the Republic of Ireland. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to entice them to come to the UK, because once we've exited the European Union, we are trying to entice a lot of these companies to come to the UK, and there are reasons why they're based in certain countries for their own
tax.
I was trying not to say that.
I think everybody knows that.
You can't, it's tax.
You said that, not me. So you can see how one incentive for enticing these internet service providers to the UK would be, well, come and do business here because we haven't got such strict regulation. So it will be an interesting, evolving conversation.
But the worrying thing is that it seems to be that we never find that balance. It's either too far over here or too far over there. The balance has got to be struck. And we just seem to be in this perpetual knee-jerk response to everything that's happening as technologies because this is all still very, nobody knows what's happening and what's going to, it was completely unforeseen consequences around when YouTube launched. Nobody imagined it would happen the way it is. Nobody imagined what was going to happen. And the interesting thing I think about that is that when things are put out into the public sphere and people are given the tools to do stuff with, it is astonishing what people do with them for good and for ill. So surely legislation is continuously going to be catching up with them anyway.
Yeah, although, as I say, I'll go back to the basic principles of copyright. You know, the Article 13 is not changing the basic principles of copyright. It is saying is we are just... So there has been a long, and I did slightly smile earlier when you said about Facebook broadcasting live, because their long argument has been, we are not a publisher, we are not a broadcaster, therefore we are not subject to Ofcom or press regulatory rules.
We are
just a platform.
And we give people the tools to do things, and it's their responsibility what they do with those tools.
Yeah, and that has been the long, long running argument for many years. And what Article 13 is now saying is that argument no longer holds weight. You are big enough and ugly enough to take some responsibility now for people using and misusing content that doesn't belong to them online.
Okay. I think that leads to those almost too much then control within those sort of organisations. I think the free reign that they've had has allowed them to expand and grow. And I think if you start to lock, like, my struggle always goes back to the idea that I don't see it as Facebook's fault or YouTube's fault when somebody else consciously uploads something to YouTube that they know is in breach of the law.
But I disagree a little bit with you there, Brandon, because I think that they do have a responsibility for what is pushed out on their channels. And I do think that otherwise you can just say, you know, anything goes and it's not our fault. We know that there are some pretty horrible things that we put out. It is, I think we do have to look at those organisations and say, you do also have a responsibility.
But I think they've already taken that responsibility. I think YouTube in their content ID system, and I'm pretty sure Facebook has some form of similar system, is that they've taken their own responsibility prior to this. And I feel like this law, this directive, which will become laws in, isn't it, 2 years that they have to implement it? So it become laws within the next 2 years. It has that struggle that it takes away, like, the work that they've done, and would mean that they would then have to resort to literally just blocking out content.
Well, I think this is the interesting thing, you know, going back to this blunt instrument. I think part of it is the whole point, this self-regulation, this blunt instrument, we're also recognising doesn't work. So what hopefully Article 13 will do is make them come up with clever and more creative ways of doing that.
Which is why it's a directive of how you would interpret it initially, is that correct?
So yeah, so the directive is a law, but you implement it in your own statute books in your own way. The final thing I would say is actually I think what should happen is that rights holders, and again, this is perhaps a disparity between, you know, a big corporation versus an individual person, but I think there's a huge market to be had in DRM, which is digital rights management, because again, I think the more we can tackle this at source, if there's something to stop somebody taking, okay, you can't stop somebody singing something, but if there's somebody, some online mechanism that stops people just regurgitating and regenerating content for their own ends.
What about memes? What about that?
Yeah, I think it hits those quite hard. Yeah.
Well, so, again, a meme is supposed to be under the parody pastiche heading. So this is what I mean about genuinely do it for the right reasons. If you've got a genuine defence to say, I'm genuinely parodying something, that's fine. But what it's not, though, everybody uses these memes to get more followers, to get more people to their sites. Like you say, if there's then some kind of advertising kickback, some pay-per-click kickback, if there's, you know, some kind of product promotion kickback, and that's where it's not right, because you're not using it genuinely for the right purposes.
For me, this directive makes it easier to put a blame onto somebody, because I think at the moment when copyright laws are breached, which I appreciate that they're breached and regularly, is that rather than having to go around and look for the specific person that did this breach, it's made it a lot easier just to go, well, it's YouTube.
One thing I would say, but I know you're saying, oh, it's not poor Facebook's fault, it's not poor Google's fault. Mm-hmm. Trust me, they will make sure it comes back on you. They will not take responsibility for this ultimately. They will put lots of terms and conditions and processes and procedures in place. They will make sure the liability comes back to you, not them.
I don't feel sorry for them because I think I agree that it should be put on you.
Yeah.
I worry that the law takes away the fact that it's your fault.
No, it doesn't. The breaching the copyright is always you, not them. The putting the systems and processes and procedures in place to stop this thing being mass distributed is on the big companies, because they're the ones in control of the distribution process. And I think that's the difference. So as I say, what they will do is just pass the liability back down the line to you. So it's not, they are not liable for the copyright breach. They are just liable for its distribution and enabling its mass distribution.
Okay.
Thank you, Samantha. Thank you, Brandon.
Thank you, Lizzie.
I have found that very educational and very interesting.
That was a very insightful conversation.
I have just been sat here listening. So, Samantha, where can people find you?
so-law.co.uk.
Brandon, where can people find you?
People can find me at brandonruff.com.
And you can find me at lizziehodgson.com. Thank you very much for listening to the ZX Spectrum.
Make sure to leave ratings, reviews, and get in touch and let us know what you think, or ideas of guests, or any ideas of what you'd like to hear us talk about.
And also, please do share this podcast. We are really starting to get a bit of steam up around, you know, these various topics. We want them to be relevant to what you want. So as Brandon says, just let us know who you'd like on here. Brandon, thank you very much.
Thank you, Lizzie.
Bye-bye.